Hi.
Ciao.
Shalom.
Ni hao.
Hallo.
Oi, pessoal.
Bonjour.
Hola, bienvenido.
Velkommen til Aarhus Universitet.
Heißen Sie willkommen.
E benvenuti all'International
Podcast.
Podcast.
La Podcast.
Podcast.
La Aarhus Universitet Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Universe International Podcast. My name is David Vranikar. I'm the international reporter for Universe, the Aarhus University newspaper. And I'm joined today by Jong Lee, who is an associate professor at AU in the Department of Epidemiology and Social Medicine. And we're going to chat with him today about a recent grant that he received from the EU and the research project that the grant is for. Lee, thanks a lot for taking the time to chat. I really appreciate it. This summer, you learned that you were going to receive a roughly 1.5 million euro grant to conduct some research. The grant came from the EU. It's a huge sum of money, especially now with the economic climate. What was the first thing you thought when you heard that you got this grant, that you got this money?
Thank you very much to David. And it's great to hear the news because it turns out that the research money is now decreasing in every scale. So it's good to have this fund because for myself it's very great to get this fund.
Mm-hmm. So you'll be looking at the effects that hormonal changes in pregnant women have on the health of the child later on.
We have been looking at this bereavement exposure in the population for several years, and my PhD project also looking at the parents who lost their child, so what kind of the health consequences in this child. And we actually found that when the parents, and especially mothers, when we lost their child, they lost their child, they feel very badly. And if we look at the long-term health consequences, and we found that some of the disease, like the psychiatric disease, and also some of these physical disease are increased. So after this exposure. So then we have this idea because in recent years, many of this experimental research shown that if a pregnant woman so experience some kind of this stress during the pregnancy, so the stress hormone might be changed after this kind of stressful life event, and then if the hormone change a lot, it might affect the organ also to development at both at like senior level or probably at the DNA, the genetic level. So the idea is very popular, and many researchers have been using the animal models to look kind of this development, or people also call this programming effects during the before one person was born. So that's the prenatal life period. Mm-hmm. So it has been well recognized. It's a very important period for human development in their future life. So after born, in their 30 years or even in the adult life to elder life, so. Happened in the during pregnancy is very important for the health in the long term. Mm-hmm. So that's the idea of the project.
You mentioned that a lot of research has been done on this with animals, but what about with humans? Are you following up on other work, or is this something that's brand new to be studying specifically human
development? I think this is a brand new research because, as I said, many animal studies have documented the evidence, but it's very difficult for a human study to observe to such kind of effect because it's very difficult to follow people in a large scale for like 20 years or 30 years. Mm-hmm. So But this project is actually using the unique datasets in Nordic countries, and it can use a very huge large population and follow a very long time scale, and then look at the association between a kind of exposure and then the health consequences. And this would be the largest, at least, and also maybe the first really looking at the very single or very well-defined exposure and the long-term program effects in a large, huge population. So that's something unique. So that's one of the very important factors we got this far. Yeah.
And you said that the health registers in Denmark and other Nordic countries will be really important. Are these sort of health registers available all over the world, or is this something that is specific to...
This is definitely something very specific or very unique in the Nordic countries, because in some of these other parts, they have this large, maybe local registers to follow some populations, but not in at the national level or not at this scale, like so large scale. So and also it's the good thing is that many of the register or many of the population studies, they designed for this study or for a special aim of the study. So probably in our epidemiology world, probably they will have kind of bias because they think about this way, probably they will tend to, maybe they don't realize it, but probably they will bias to what kind of the outcome, and they will pay special attention and neglect some of the effects. But this registers is what built from the administrative purpose. So at the beginning, it's not for a special study. So this kind of data maybe is more trustable when we use it for research. So less bias, less information bias from this kind of data.
So you could not do this project anywhere else?
No, definitely. So it's only in the Nordic countries we can do this project. Research strains in logical paths and in logical world.
What do you hope to achieve with this research? What do you, if it goes the way you want, what sort of conclusions or research ideas do you hope to generate with this project?
I think we are quite ambitious because first we have this very large data set and probably use this dataset because this dataset including so many people and then covers three countries and the people, the children born from 1970s to 80s, and then we can follow up from their birth and up to 40 years, something like that. And then with this, we can testify and really could examine what is true or what is how different from animal model evidence and to the human population. So this really, we can really see how this evidence or research results from animal studies or other experimental studies, how can be translated to the population level. So because the animal studies really, they want to see something about the human, but they really need this kind of human evidence to support their findings. And the other way, we can examine back if something is not in line with the findings and what the problems or what kind of new insights can be generated from these studies.
When you do your research, will you actually be working so much with individuals? Will you be talking with people, or is it going to be just looking at the databases, looking at the registers? I mean, is it?
No, we are not looking at this any individuals, and we won't visit people because one thing is that for this huge large population, it's impossible to look at, and also Yeah, we have this data already over there. So why we don't just make use of that and to invest a huge amount of money for the data we already have? So it's a very cost effective kind of design for the research.
You mentioned that some of the things that take place when a child is in the womb they have effects 10, 20, 30, or 40 years down the road. It's not always immediate. How long of a period will you be looking at? You know, how big of a time frame will your data be
for? Yeah, that's right. Because it all depends that which outcomes we are looking at. Because say if we want to look at the asthma at childhood, so when something happened during the pregnancy, and then if we want to look at asthma, that's a kind of child disease, it will need like 5-10 years or maybe 20 years follow at most. But if we want to look at cancer, then we need more long time period. So it's good that now if we establish this huge cohort, we actually could follow up all these people from very early age to the late age. And then if we are lucky, if we get more money, so we can just follow up all these people to look at this cancer or cardiovascular disease or some of this adult disease. So we have not what set a time frame, but we are open to from after birth to until the end of the life. So it's that kind of life course research. We call it life course epidemiology. Okay. So we look at the whole life.
So you can look at a span of decades, but you don't need to wait decades.
So
how long do you anticipate this project lasting? I mean, how much time will you need to get the results that you're looking for?
I think for some of the outcomes, it all depends on how many people can work on this project because the data is already there. So if we're lucky, we have 3 or 4 PhD students and maybe 2 postdoc researchers. We think we can have many results in 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah, and the quickest maybe in 1 or 2 years. Yeah.
Do you have any hypotheses that you are looking to prove, or do you have any ideas that you expect to see when you look at this data, or are you going in with a clean slate, not knowing what you will see with the data?
Because there has been a lot of hypotheses going on, because people are talking about in these days, like we have this epidemic of diabetes or obesity and also cancer or maybe asthma. These disease are really going up during the 2 or 3 decades, and the people are really want to find out what happens. And many research have been looking at the environmental factors and also maybe genetic factors, and also many of these preventive measures are always performed, recording this, and they try to reduce the disease. But it seems not very successful because if successful, and then we can see the decrease, like the smoking. If we know smoking causes cancer, lung cancer, and then we do something to stop smoking and the lung cancer will decrease. But this is a very special case. But for many other diseases, major epidemic, we still cannot see the decrease, or at least it's not what decrease or not. So that's why we try to identify maybe another potential risk factors. It's not well defined, so particularly in this prenatal period. So that's some of the theory. If we found this factors are really important, we can do some of this prevention during or before the birth. So that might do something or open new window for this disease prevention or disease control.
this might be a stupid question, but yeah. I don't know a lot about science, so I forgive me if it's bad. But if you find certain results that take place in Denmark, Finland, Sweden, in these Scandinavian countries, if you find relationships between hormonal changes in the mother and the health of the child, can you assume that those same results will apply to all humans, or do you have to factor in that it's only Scandinavia that you're looking at?
No, I don't think that, because I think if we find that the truth, it's not only the problem here, because like the bereavement or the stress changes, it's not specific in Nordic countries. It could be all over the world, and many of the research saying the stress now, is the stress level in modern society is increasing, but the other things is that the stress is very difficult to research, because like many things can cause stress, and then if we do a research, normally it's very difficult to find a very good contrast between different stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
So and also many sources of the stress. So this is why the difficulty in the stress research. But if we could confirm that, because we use this very, very what obvious stress indicator, mm-hmm. like loss of a family member. So if we confirm this finding the true, we can very support that the stress hypothesis, so the stress in the world now is actually causing more problems, and then people will be aware, or people will be confirmed that this stress really causes the health burden in all over the world.
Do you have any idea how, if the Scandinavian population, how it compares to other populations in terms of stress? I mean, is this society in Denmark or in the rest of Scandinavia, is it more or less stressed out than the rest of the world? I mean, would you expect different results if you were in the U.S. or?
It's always what complicated when we put this kind of findings into other population, mm-hmm. because it's very difficult to assess what kind of difference between the different societies.
Right.
And at least we can say with what obvious contrast between exposure level, it will be different, but we could expect some kind of similar findings in other societies like the U.S., but maybe it's not the same scale, but mm-hmm. it will be there.
So let's say that you discover that there's a strong relationship between, I don't know, stress and diabetes in a child, or the mother's stress and asthma.
Yeah.
If there's a strong relationship, and you prove this over the years of your research, what then? I mean, what would your results change? What would you suggest? What would the impact be on pregnant women and then on the health of the child?
I think it will be like, first, it will be a very good information for this pregnant woman, because they know they might would find from themselves. They might find a way to cope their stress, or at least try to be healthy,
mm-hmm.
or to be happy during the pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
because every tiny or tiny influence in this period will be affect their babies in very long term. So
mm-hmm.
this will cause the importance for this topic. So they will manage their stress level during the pregnancy, and the other thing especially that it will be very good important information for the health professionals, because some of the health professionals are trying to work on this or try to recognize how important the stress during pregnancy, and then they need this kind of evidence to support their research, and
mm-hmm.
they need to this kind of evidence to support to change their health policies in their country. So maybe they will use this to like maybe to have more support to support the pregnant woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then
bless the Father, bless the Son, cross your heart, cause you're the one collecting moonbeams in the morning.
Great. Let me ask you about how you got the grant in the first place. The topic is really interesting, and it seems very, you know, important when you're talking about the health of children and the impacts and stuff like that. But what was the process like working with the EU and working with the university? And tell me how you were able to, you know, get this grant.
Okay, so the research, you know that the European Research Council, every year they will publish a call for sometimes for very specific topic, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's not a very specific topic, like they support the ideas, the first ideas from research themselves. It's kind of called idea program.
Yeah.
So from 5 years ago or 3 years ago, the EU developed a program especially to support the young researchers, like researchers after postdoc, after PhD years, and they found that this research, young research, they might need, or they definitely need support for their own research ideas, mm-hmm. after their PhD program, and they have the ideas very often, but they don't have the according support.
Okay.
So they developed a grant stream called Start Granting. So especially to support the postdoc years, the researchers, and help them to build their own scientific team to prove their research ideas.
You had to go to Brussels last summer. What was that like? Were you nervous when you presented to the EU?
Of course, because this also is the first time for me. Of course, yeah, first time for many research over there. And then when we go there, it's like kind of not very strange. First, you go to room and waiting, and then the people call someone and go into the interview. And then when I enter the room, like I sit here, and then the very long table, and then more than 20 people sitting like there, then waiting for me. So it's kind of a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
You must
have done pretty well.
Right? Yeah,
you must have done okay. Yeah. You've been teaching in Aarhus since 2006, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Not really teaching because I cannot speak Danish. And then
researching.
I have been teaching in China for some years, and then I have been doing research in Aarhus University.
So you taught in China for about 10 years, and then Australia for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
What's it like teaching and researching and working with other people in all these different countries? Do you find are there more similarities or differences? What's that like?
It's a very interesting topic anyway, because in China, when I was in China, some of the time I teach, and then sometimes I do research, and because I say it's a different kind of research when I was in China, and also because in China, as a junior epidemiologist, I went to the fields to work with the patients and also the controls, so we get actually talk to the people, maybe take the samples from people. So that's a kind of different research. And then when I was in Australia, it's more similar because in Australia I work with this project, and they almost have some of the research projects have this data, like very similar here, but they have the data over there, and I would generate research hypothesis and then prove or analyze data. So a kind of more similarity in Australia, in Denmark.
You're originally from China,
from
near Shanghai.
Yeah.
Do you plan to ever go back and live in China, or?
I think now it's difficult. Emotionally, I would like to go back to China because my parents and my friends are there, and then, but in practical it's difficult because now if I want to go back now there, I'm not sure whether I can get a very good position over there to do the research I want to do.
Right.
And then the other thing is, it's maybe more important because I have the kids, and then when it's they are now 10 years or 14 years, and then it's more difficult for them to go back to mm-hmm. to follow the Chinese mm-hmm. education system. So it's more like practical things. But I really would like to go back to China and to work together with the Chinese colleagues again, or to do some of the research.
No time soon, though.
Yeah, not soon.
Right. Great. Well, Lee, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat. This is really interesting. Mm. Congratulations again on the grant, and we'll look forward to seeing the results.
Okay, thank you very much.